Chapter 21. A Mark. Alviarin stepped through the gateway, letting it snap shut behind her in a fading slash of brilliant blue-white, and almost immediately sneezed from the dust kicked up by her shoes. At once another sneeze racked her, and then another that brought tears to her eyes. Lit only by the glowing globe that floated in front of her, the rough-walled storeroom hewn out of the bedrock 3 levels below the tower library was empty, except for centuries' worth of dust. She would much rather have returned straight to her apartments in the tower itself, but there was always the chance of walking in to find a servant cleaning, and then she would have to get rid of the body and hope that no one remembered that the servant had last been seen going into her rooms. Remain hidden and rouse not even the slightest hint of suspicion, Masana had commanded. That seemed over-timid when the Black Aja had walked the tower with impunity since its founding, but when one of the chosen commanded, only a fool disobeyed. At least if there was any chance of being found out. Irritably, Alviarin channeled to force the dust out of the air, slamming it down so hard that the stone floor should have shaken. She would not have to go through this every time if she simply swept all the dust into a corner rather than leaving it spread out. No one else had come this far into the library basements in years. No one would notice the room was clean. But someone was always doing what no one ever did. She often did so herself, and she did not intend to be caught through a foolish mistake. Still, she grumbled under her breath as she channeled the reddish mud from her shoes and the hem of her skirts and cloak. It seemed unlikely that anyone would recognize it as coming from Tremalking, the largest of the Seafolk Islands, but someone might wonder where she had been to get muddy. The tower grounds would be buried in snow except where they had been shoveled clear and the dirt frozen hard. Still muttering to herself, she channeled again to muffle the squeal of rusted hinges as she pushed open the rough wooden door. There was a way to make a weave and hide it, so she would not have to soften that creak every time. She was certain there was. But Masana refused to teach it to her. Masana was the real source of her annoyance. The chosen taught what she wished and nothing more, hinted at wonders, then withheld them. And Masana used her like an errand girl. She sat at the head of the Supreme Council and knew the names of every black sister in every heart, which was more than Masana could say. The woman showed little interest in who would carry out her orders so long as they were carried out, and to the absolute letter. All too often she wanted them carried out by Alviarin herself, forcing her to deal with women and men who thought themselves her equals, just because they also served the great lord. Too many of the friends thought themselves equal to Aes Sedai, or even superior. Worse, Masana forbade her to make an object lesson of even one. Repellent little rodents, none able to channel, and Alviarin had to be polite just because some of them might be serving another of the chosen. It was obvious that Masana did not know for sure. She was one of the chosen, and she made Alviarin smile at the dust of the street for her uncertainty. The ball of pale light floating ahead of her for illumination, Alviarin glided down the rough stone corridor, smoothing the dust behind with feathery brushes of air so it would seem undisturbed, and rehearsing several choice things she would like to say to Masana. She would actually say none of them, of course, which only honed her irritation. Criticizing one of the chosen in even the mildest terms was a short path to pain, perhaps to death. Almost surely both, in truth. With the chosen, grovel and obey was the only way to survive, and the first was as important as the second. The prize of immortality was worth a little groveling. With that she could gain all the power she wished, much more than any Amerlin had ever wielded. First, though, it was necessary to survive. Once she reached the top of the first ramp leading upward, she no longer bothered hiding her traces. There was not nearly so much dust here, and that marked by the wheels of hand carts and scuffs from shoes. Another set of faint footprints would never be noticed. She still walked quickly, though. Usually the thought of living forever brightened her, the thought of eventually wielding power through Masana as she now did through Elida. Well, almost the same. Expecting to bring Mesana to Elida's state of compliance was too ambitious, but she could still tie strings to the woman that would assure her own rise. Today her mind kept returning to the fact that she had been out of the tower for almost a month. Mesana would not have bothered to keep Elida under control during her absence, though the Chosen would surely lay the fault at Alviarin's feet if anything had gone amiss. Of course, Elida was properly cowed after the last time. The woman had begged for release from taking private penances from the Mistress of Novices. Of course, she was too cowed to have stepped out of line. Of course. Alviarin pushed Elida firmly to the back of her head, but she did not slow her steps. A second ramp took her to the highest basement, where she let the glowing ball vanish and released Sidar. The shadows here were dotted with pools of wan light that nearly touched one another, cast by lamps sitting in iron brackets along stone walls that were neatly dressed on this level. Nothing moved except for a rat that went scuttling away with a faint click of claws on the floorstones. That almost made her smile. Almost. The Great Lord's eyes riddled the tower now, though no one seemed to have noticed that the wardings had failed. She did not think it was anything Mesana had done. The wards simply no longer worked as they were supposed to. There were gaps. She certainly did not care whether the animal saw her or reported what it had seen, but she still ducked quickly into a narrow, circular staircase. There might be people about on this level, and people were not to be trusted the same as rats. Perhaps, she thought as she climbed, she could probe Mesana about that impossible flare in the power, so long as she was delicate. The Chosen would think she was hiding something if she never mentioned it. Every woman who could channel in the whole world had to be wondering what had happened. She would just have to be careful not to let slip anything that suggested that she had actually visited the site. Long after the flare vanished, of course, she was not stupid enough to simply stroll into that. But Mesana seemed to think Alviarin should carry out her chores without taking a moment for herself. Could the woman really believe that she had no affairs of her own to see to? It was best to behave as if she did have none. For the moment it was, at least. In the shadows at the top of the stairs, she stopped in front of the small plain door, roughly finished on this side, in order to take hold of herself as she folded her cloak over her arm. Mesana was one of the Chosen, but still human. Mesana made mistakes, and she would kill Alviarin in a heartbeat if she made one. Grovel, obey, and survive, and always be wary. She had known that long before meeting one of the Chosen. Retrieving the white keeper's stole from her belt pouch, she settled it around her neck and cracked the door carefully to listen. Silence, as expected. She stepped out into the ninth depository and closed the door behind her. On the inner side, the door was no less plain, but polished to a soft glow. The tower library was divided into 12 depositories, at least insofar as the world knew, and the ninth was the smallest, given over to texts on various forms of arithmetic. Yet it was still a large chamber, a long oval with a flattened dome for a ceiling, filled with row on row of tall wooden shelves, each surrounded by a narrow walkway 4 paces above the 7 colored floor tiles. Tall ladders stood alongside the shelves, on wheels so they could be moved easily, both on the floor and on the walkways, and mirrored brass stand lamps with bases so heavy that each took 3 or 4 men to move. Fire was a constant concern in the library. The stand lamps all burned brightly, ready to light the way for any sister who wanted to find a book or boxed manuscript, but a shelved handcart holding 3 large leather-cased volumes to be replaced was still in the middle of one aisle exactly where she remembered it from the last time she walked through. She did not understand why there was any need for different forms of arithmetic, or why so many books had been written on them, and for all the tower prided itself on having the greatest collection of books in the world covering every possible topic, it seemed that most Aes Sedai agreed with her. She had never seen another sister in the ninth depository, the reason she used it for her entryway. At the wide arched doors, standing invitingly open, she listened until she was satisfied that the corridor beyond was empty before slipping out. Anyone would have thought it strange that she had developed an interest for the books in there. As she hurried along the main corridors, where the floor tiles were laid in repeating rows of the Aja colors, it came to her that the library was more silent than usual, even counting how few Aes Sedai remained in the tower at present. There was always a sister or two to be seen, if only the librarians. Some Browns actually maintained apartments in the upper levels in addition to their rooms in the tower. Yet the huge figures carved into the corridor's walls, fancifully garbed people and strange animals 10 feet tall or more, might have been the library's only inhabitants. Drafts made the intricately carved lamp wheels, hanging 10 paces overhead, creak faintly on their chains. Her footsteps seemed unnaturally loud, casting soft echoes from the vaulted ceiling. "May I help you?" a woman's voice said quietly behind her. Startled, Alviarin spun around, almost dropping her cloak before she could catch herself. "I just wanted to walk through the library, Zamyla," she said, and immediately felt a stab of irritation. If she was jumpy enough to explain herself to a librarian, then she really did need to take a grip before she reported to Masana. She almost wanted to tell Zamyla what was happening on Trimalking, just to see whether the woman would flinch. The bland expression on the Brown sister's dark face did not change, but a touch of some unreadable emotion altered the pitch of her voice. Tall and very lean, Zamyla always held that outer mask of reserve and distance, but Alviarin suspected she was less shy than she pretended, and less pleasant. "That's quite understandable. The library is restful, and it's a sad time for us all. And sadder still for you, of course." "Of course," Alviarin repeated, as if by rote. "A sad time? For her in particular?" She considered drawing the woman to some secluded corner where she could be questioned and disposed of, but then she noticed another Brown, a round woman even darker than Zamyla, watching them from farther down the hall. Aiden and Zamyla were weak in the power, yet overcoming both at once would be difficult if it was possible at all. Why were they both down here on the ground floor? The pair was seldom seen, shuttling between the rooms on the upper levels they shared with Niain, the third Seafolk sister, and the so-called 13th depository where the secret records were kept. All three worked there, willingly immersed to their necks in their labors. She walked on and tried to tell herself she was being skittish without reason, but that did nothing to soothe the prickling between her shoulder blades. The lack of librarians guarding the front entrance only made the prickles grow. Librarians always stood at every entrance to make sure not a scrap of paper left the library without their knowledge. Alviarin channeled to shove one of the tall carved doors open before she reached it and left it standing agape on its bronze hinges as she hurried down the wide marble stairs. The broad oak-lined stone path that led toward the tall white shaft of the tower had been shoveled clear, but if it had not been, she would have used the power to melt the snow away ahead of her, let anyone think of it what they would. Masana had made crystal clear the price of taking the risk that anyone might learn the weave for traveling, or even that she knew it, else she would have traveled from the spot. With the tower in sight, looming over the trees and gleaming in the pale morning sunlight, she could have been there in a step. Instead, she fought the urge to run. It was no surprise to find the tower's wide, tall corridors empty. A few scurrying servants with the white flame of Tarvalin on their breasts bobbed their bows and curtsies as she passed, but they were no more use, no more important, than the drafts that made the gilded stand lamps flicker and rippled the bright tapestries hanging on the snowy white walls. Sisters kept to their own Aja quarters as much as possible these days, of course, and unless she encountered a member of her own heart, even seeing an Aes Sedai she knew was Black Aja would have been useless. She knew them, but they did not know her. Besides, she was not about to reveal herself to anyone she did not have to. Perhaps some of those marvelous instruments from the Age of Legends that Masana talked about would allow her to question any sister immediately one day, if the woman ever actually produced them. but now it was still a matter of ciphered orders left on pillows or in secret spots. What had once seemed almost instantaneous responses now seemed interminably delayed. A stocky, bald-headed serving man, making his bow, gulped audibly, and she smoothed her features. She prided herself on her icy detachment, always presenting a cool, unruffled surface. In any event, scowling her way through the tower was going to get her exactly nowhere. There was one person in the tower she was sure she knew exactly where to find, someone she could demand answers from with no fear of what the woman thought. A little caution was needed even there, of course. Careless questions revealed more than most answers were worth. But Elida would tell her anything. With a sigh, she began to climb. Messana had told her of another marvel of the Age of Legends that she wished very much to see, a thing called a lift. The flying machine sounded much grander, of course, but it was far easier to envision a mechanical contrivance that whisked you from floor to floor. She was not really certain that buildings several times as high as the White Tower could really have existed, either. In the whole world, not even the Stone of Tyr rivaled the tower's height. But just knowing about lifts made climbing up spiraling hallways and sweeping flights of stairs seem laborious. She did pause at the Ammerlin's study, only 3 levels up, but as expected, both rooms were empty, the bare writing tables polished till they shone. The rooms themselves seemed bare, with no wall hangings, no ornaments, nothing at all but the tables and chairs and unlit stand lamps. Elida rarely came down from her apartments near the tower's peak anymore. That had seemed acceptable at one time, since it isolated the woman even more from the rest of the tower. Few sisters made that climb willingly. Today, though, by the time Alviarin had climbed close to 80 spans, she was seriously considering making Elida move back down. Elida's waiting room was empty, of course, though a folder of papers sitting atop the writing table said someone had been there. Seeing what they contained and deciding whether Elida needed to be punished for having it could wait, though. Alviarin tossed her cloak down on the writing table and pushed open the door, newly carved with the flame of Tarvalin, and awaiting the Gilder, that led deeper into the apartments. She was surprised at the surge of relief she felt at seeing Elida sitting behind the starkly carved and gilded writing table, the 6-striped now, stole around her neck, and the flame of Tarvalin picked out in moonstones among the goldwork on the high chairback above her head. A niggling worry that she had not let surface until now had been the possibility that the woman was dead in some fool accident. That would have explained Zamyla's comment. Choosing a new Ammerlin could have taken months, even with the rebels and everything else confronting them, but her days as keeper would have been numbered. What surprised her more than her relief, though, was the presence of more than half the sitters in the hall standing in front of the writing table in their fringed shawls. Elida knew better than to entertain this sort of delegation without her present. The huge gilded case clock against the wall, a vulgarly over-ornamented piece, chimed twice for high, small enameled figures of Aes Sedai popping out of tiny doors in its front as she opened her mouth to tell the sitters that she needed to confer with the Ammerlin privately. They would leave with little hemming or hawing. A keeper had no authority to order them out, but they knew that her authority extended beyond that her stole conferred, even if they did not begin to suspect how that could be. "Alviarin," Elida said, sounding surprised, before she could get a word out. The hardness of Elida's face softened in what almost seemed pleasure. Her mouth quirked close to a smile. Elida had had no reasons to smile in some time. "Stand over there and be quiet until I have time to deal with you," she said, waving an imperious hand toward a corner of the room. The sitters shifted their feet and adjusted their shawls. Suana, a beefy woman, gave Alviarin a tight glance, and Siobhan, tall as a man and angular, stared straight at her with no expression, but the others avoided meeting her eye. Stunned, she stood stock still on the brightly patterned silk carpet, gaping. This could not be mere rebellion on Elida's part. The woman would have to be insane. But what in the name of the great Lord had happened to give her the nerve? What? Elida's hand slapped the tabletop with a loud crack, a blow that made one of the lacquered boxes there rattle. "When I tell you to stand in the corner, daughter," she said in a low, dangerous voice, "I expect you to obey." Her eyes glittered. "Or shall I summon the mistress of novices so these sisters can witness your private penance?" Heat suffused Alviarin's face, part humiliation and part anger. To have anyone hear such things said, and to her face. Fear bubbled in her, too, turning her stomach to acid. A few words from her, and Elida would stand accused of sending sisters to disaster and captivity not once but twice. Rumors had already begun swirling about events in Kyrian, murky rumors, but growing more certain by the day. And once it was learned that on top of that, Elida had sent 50 sisters to try to defeat hundreds of men who could channel, not even the existence of the rebel sisters wintering in Murundi with their army would keep the Ammerlin's stole on her shoulders or her head. She could not dare to do this. Unless she could discredit Alviarin as Black Aja, that might gain her a little time. Only a little, surely, once the facts about Dumai's Wells and the Black Tower were known, but Elida might be ready to grasp at straws. No, it was not possible, could not be possible. Flight certainly was impossible. For one thing, if Elida was ready to lay charges, flight would only confirm them. For another, Massana would find her and kill her if she fled. All that flashed through her head as she moved on leaden feet to stand in the corner like a penitent novice. There had to be a way to recover from this, whatever had happened. There was always a way to recover. Listening might find it for her. She would have prayed if the Dark Lord listened to prayers. Elida studied her for a moment, then gave a satisfied nod. The woman's eyes still shone with emotion, though. Lifting the lid of one of the three lacquered boxes on her table, she took out a small, age-darkened ivory carving of a turtle and stroked it between her fingers. Fondling the carvings in that box was a habit she had when she wanted to soothe her nerves. "Now," she said, "you were explaining to me why I should enter negotiations." "We were not asking permission, Mother," Suana said sharply, thrusting her chin out. She had too much chin, a square stone of it, and the arrogance to thrust it at anyone. "A decision of this sort belongs to the Hall. There is strong feeling in favor of it in the Yellow Aja," which meant she had strong feelings. She was the head of the Yellow Aja, the first weaver, something Alviarin knew, because the Black Aja knew all the Aja secrets, or nearly all, and in Suana's view, her opinions were her Aja's opinions. Doasine, the other yellow present, eyed Suana sideways, but said nothing. Pale and boyishly slim, Doasine looked as if she did not really want to be there, a pretty sulky boy who had been dragged somewhere by his ear. Sitters often balked at arm-twisting from their Aja's head, yet it was not beyond possibility that Suana had found some way. "Many whites also support talks," Farana said, frowning distractedly at an ink stain on one plump finger. "It is the logical thing to do under the present circumstances." She was first reasoner, head of the White Aja, but less likely than Suana to take her own views for those of the entire Aja. A little less likely. Farana often seemed as vague as the worst of the Browns. The long black hair that framed her round face needed a brush, and part of the fringe on her shawl appeared to have been dipped carelessly in her breakfast tea, but she could catch the slightest crack in the logic of an argument. She might well have been there by herself because she simply did not believe she needed any assistance from the other white sitters. Leaning back in her tall chair, Elida began to glower, her fingers stroking faster on the turtle, and Andaya spoke up quickly, not quite looking at Elida while pretending to adjust the set of her gray-fringed shawl along her arms. "The point, Mother, is that we must find a way to end this peacefully," she said, the Tarabonner accent strong in her speech as it was when she felt uneasy. Frequently diffident around Elida, she glanced at Yukiri as though hoping for support, but the slender little woman turned her head aside slightly. Yukiri was remarkably stubborn for such a tiny woman. Unlike Doacene, she would not have responded to arm-twisting. So why was she here if she did not want to be? Realizing that she was on her own, Andaya rushed on. It must not be allowed to come to fighting in the streets of Tarvalen, or in the tower, especially not that, not again. So far the rebels seem content to sit and watch the city, but that cannot last. They have rediscovered how to travel, Mother, and have used it to carry an army across hundreds of leagues. We must begin talks before they all decide to use traveling to bring that army into Tarvalen, or all is lost, even if we win. Fists knotted in her skirts, Alviarin swallowed hard. She thought her eyes might pop out of her head. The rebels knew how to travel. They were here at Tarvalen already? And these fools wanted to talk? She could see carefully laid plans, carefully arranged designs, evaporating like mist in a summer sun. Perhaps the Dark Lord would listen if she prayed very hard. Elida's scowl did not diminish, but she set the ivory turtle down very carefully, and her voice came close to normal. The old normal, before Alviarin reined her in, with a steel core beneath the softness of the words. Do the brown and the green also support talks? The brown, Siobhan began, then pursed her lips in thought and visibly changed what she had intended to say. Outwardly she seemed utterly composed, yet she was rubbing her long thumbs against her bony forefingers unconsciously. The brown is quite clear on the historical precedents. You have all read the secret histories, or should have. Whenever the tower has been divided against itself, disaster has struck the world. With the last battle looming in a world that contains the Black Tower, we can no longer afford to remain divided a day longer than need be. It hardly seemed that Elida's face could grow darker, but mention of the Black Tower did it. And the green? Her voice was still controlled. All three green sitters were there, indicating very strong support among their Aja, or heavy pressure from the head of the green. As senior, Talin should have answered Elida. Greens stuck to their hierarchies in everything, but the tall, golden-haired woman glanced at Yukiri for some reason, then, just as oddly, at Doacene, and put her eyes on the carpet and stood plucking at her green silk skirts. Rena frowned faintly, wrinkling her upturned nose in puzzlement, but she had worn the shawl for fewer than 50 years, so it was left to Rubinda to reply. A sturdy woman, Rubinda appeared short and stocky alongside Talin, and almost plain, despite eyes the color of sapphires. "I'm instructed to make the same points as Siobhan," she said, ignoring the startled look that Rena gave her. Plainly there had been pressure from Adalorna, the green captain general, and plainly Rubinda disagreed, if she was willing to make it public. Tarmin Gaiden is coming. The Black Tower is almost as great a threat, and the Dragon Reborn is missing if he isn't dead. We can no longer afford to be divided. If Andaya can talk the rebels back into the tower, then we must let her try.
I see, Elida said in a flat tone.
But strangely, her color improved, and the hint of a smile even touched her mouth.
Then by all means talk them back if you can, but my edicts stand. The Blue Aja no longer exists, and every sister who follows that child Egwene Alvir must serve penance under my guidance before she can be readmitted to any Aja. I intend to weld the White Tower into a weapon to use at Tarmin Gaiden.
Farana and Suana opened their mouths, protest painted on their faces, but Elida cut them off with a raised hand.
I have spoken, daughters. Leave me now. And see to your talks.
There was nothing the sitters could do short of open defiance. What was the hall's right was theirs, but the hall seldom dared infringe far on the Ammerlin seat's authority, not unless the hall was united against the Ammerlin, and this hall was anything but united on any point. Alviarin had helped ensure that herself. They left, Farana and Suana, stiff-backed and tight-lipped, Andaya almost scurrying.
None of them so much as glanced in Alviarin's direction. She barely waited for the door to close behind the last.
"This really changes nothing, Elida. Surely you see that. You must think clearly, not trip over a momentary aberration."
She knew she was babbling, but she could not seem to stop.
"The disaster at Dumai's Wells? The certain disaster at the Black Tower? These can still unseat you. You need me to hold on to the staff and stole. You need me, Elida. You—"
She clamped her teeth shut before her tongue threw everything away. There still had to be a way.
"I'm surprised you returned," Elida said, rising and smoothing her red-slashed skirts. She had never given up her way of dressing as a red. Strangely, she was smiling as she came around the table. Not a hint at a smile, but a full, pleased curve of her lips.
"Have you been hiding somewhere in the city since the rebels arrived? I thought you'd have taken ship as soon as you learned they were here. Who would have thought they would rediscover traveling? Imagine what we can do once we know that."
Smiling, she glided across the carpet.
"Now let me see. What do I have to fear from you? The stories out of Kyrian are the talk of the tower, but even if sisters really were obeying the Althor boy, which I, for one, cannot believe, everyone blames Coiran. She had the responsibility of bringing him here, and she has as good as been tried and convicted in the minds of the sisters."
Elida stopped in front of Alviarin, hemming her into the corner. That smile never touched her eyes. She smiled, and her eyes glittered. Alviarin could not break away from that gaze.
"In the last week, we've heard a good many things about the Black Tower as well."
Elida's lips twisted in disgust around the name.
"It seems there are even more men than you supposed. But everyone thinks Tovain must have had the sense to learn that before she attacked. There has been a good deal of discussion over it. If she comes dragging back here defeated, she will harvest the blame. So your threats—"
Alviarin staggered into the wall, blinking away spots before she even realized that the other woman had slapped her. Her cheek already felt swollen. The glow of Sidar had surrounded Elida, and the shield settled on Alviarin before she could twitch, cutting her off from the power. But Elida did not intend to use the power. She drew back a fist, still smiling. Slowly, the woman drew a deep breath and let her hand fall. She did not remove the shield, however.
"Would you really use that?" she asked in an almost mild tone.
Alviarin's hand sprang away from the hilt of her belt knife. Grabbing it had been a reflex, but even if Elida had not been holding the power, killing her when so many sitters knew they were together would have been as good as killing herself. Still, her face burned when Elida sniffed contemptuously.
"I look forward to seeing your neck stretched on the headsman's block for treason, Alviarin. But until I have the proof I need, there are still a few things I can do. Do you remember how many times you had Sylviana come to give me private penance? I hope you do, because you are going to take 10 for every day I suffered. And, oh yes."
With a jerk, she pulled the keeper's stole roughly from Alviarin's neck.
"Since no one could find you when the rebels arrived, I asked the hall to remove you as keeper. Not the full hall, of course. You may still have a little influence there. But it was surprisingly easy to gain the consensus from those who were sitting that day. A keeper is supposed to be with her Amarlin, not wandering off on her own. On second thought, you may not have any influence at all, since it turns out you were hiding in the city all along. Or did you sail back to find disaster and actually think you could recover something from the ruins? No matter. It might have been better for you to leap on the first ship you could find leaving Tarvalen. But I must admit, the thought of you scuttling from village to village, ashamed to show your face to another sister, pales beside the pleasure I'll take seeing you suffer. Now get out of my sight before I decide it should be the birch rather than Sylviana's strap."
Tossing the white stole to the floor, she turned her back and released Sidar, gliding toward her chair as if Alviarin had ceased to exist. Alviarin did not leave. She fled, running with the feel of the Darkhound's breath on the back of her neck. She had barely been able to think since she heard the word treason. That word echoing in her head made her want to howl.
Treason could only mean one thing. Elida knew, and she was searching for proof.
The Dark Lord have mercy. But he never did. Mercy was for those afraid to be strong. She was not afraid. She was a skin stuffed to bursting with terror.
Back down through the tower she fled, and if there was so much as a servant in the hallways, she did not see him. Horror blinded her eyes to anything not directly in her path. All the way back down to the 6th level she ran, to her own apartments. At least, she supposed they were still hers for the moment. The rooms with their balcony overlooking the great square in front of the tower went with the office of keeper. For the moment it was enough that she still had rooms and a chance to live. The furnishings were still the Damani pieces left by the previous occupant, all pale-striped wood, inlaid with pearl shell and amber. In the bedchamber she threw open one of the wardrobes and fell to her knees, pushing aside dresses to rummage in the back for a small chest, a box less than 2 hands square that had been hers for many years. The carving on the box was intricate but clumsy, rows of varied knots apparently done by a carver with more ambition than skill. Her hands shook as she carried it to a table, and she set it down to wipe clammy palms on her dress. The trick to opening the box was simply a matter of spreading her fingers as wide as they would go to press simultaneously at 4 knots in the carving, no 2 alike. The lid lifted slightly and she threw it back, revealing her most precious possession wrapped in a small bundle of brown cloth to keep it from rattling if a maid shook the box. Most tower servants would not risk stealing, but most did not mean all. For a moment Alviarin only stared at the package, her most precious possession, a thing from the Age of Legends, but she had never dared use it before. Only in the worst emergency, Masana had said, the most desperate need, yet what need could be more dire than this? Masana said the thing could take hammer blows without breaking, but she undid the wrappings with the care she would have used with a piece of fine-blown glass, revealing a turangrial, a brilliant red rod no larger than her forefinger, utterly smooth except for a few fine lines worked into the surface in a sinuous, interconnecting pattern. Embracing the source, she touched that pattern with hair-thin flows of fire and earth at 2 of the interconnections. That would not have been necessary in the Age of Legends, but something called the standing flows no longer existed. A world where almost any turangrial could be used by people unable to channel seemed odd beyond comprehension. Why had it been allowed? Pressing one end of the rod hard with her thumb, the one power was not enough by itself, she sat down heavily and leaned against the chair's low back, staring at the thing in her hand. It was done. She felt hollow now. A vast, empty space, with fears fluttering through the darkness like enormous bats. Instead of rewrapping the turangrial, she tucked it into her belt pouch and got up long enough to stuff the box back into the wardrobe. Until she knew she was safe, she did not intend to let that rod out of her possession. But then all she could do was sit and wait, rocking back and forth with her hands clasped between her knees. She could not stop rocking any more than she could stop the low moans that trickled between her teeth. Since the founding of the tower, no sister had ever been charged with being Black Aja. Oh, there had been suspicions by individual sisters, and from time to time Aes Sedai had died to make sure those suspicions never went further, but never had it come to official charges. If Elida was willing to speak openly of the headsman's block, she must be close to bringing charges. Very close. Black sisters had been made to disappear, too, when suspicions grew too great. The Black Aja remained hidden, whatever the cost. She wished she could stop moaning. Suddenly the light in the room dimmed, enveloping the chamber in swirling twilight shadows. The sunlight at the casements seemed unable to penetrate beyond the glass panes. Alviarin was on her knees in a breath, eyes down. She trembled with wanting to pour out her fears, but with the chosen the forms must be followed. "I live to serve, great mistress," she said, and nothing more. She could not waste a moment, much less an hour, screaming in pain. Her hands were clutched together to keep them from shaking. "What is your grave emergency, child?"
It was a woman's voice, but a voice of crystal chimes. Displeased chimes. Only displeased. Angry chimes might have meant death on the spot.
"If you think I will raise a finger to get the keeper's stole back for you, you are sadly mistaken. You can still do what I wish done with a little extra effort, and you may consider your penances with the Mistress of Novices a small punishment from me. I did warn you about pushing Elida quite so hard."
Alviarin swallowed her protests. Elida was not a woman to bend without hard pushing. Massana had to know that. But protests could be dangerous with the Chosen. Many things were dangerous with the Chosen. In any case, Sylviana's strap was a trifle compared to the headsman's axe.
"Elida knows, great mistress," she breathed, raising her eyes.
In front of her stood a woman of light and shadow, clothed in light and shadow, all stark blacks and silvery whites that flowed from one to the other and back. Silver eyes frowned from a face of smoke, with silver lips drawn in a tight line. It was only illusion, and really not done any better than Alviarin could have. A flash of green silk skirt embroidered with elaborate bands of bronze showed as Massana glided across the Damani carpet. But Alviarin could not see the weaves that made the illusion any more than she had felt those the woman had used to arrive or cast the room in shadows. For all she could sense, Massana could not channel at all. The lust for those two secrets usually cut at her, but today she hardly noticed.
"She knows I am Black Aja, great mistress. If she has uncovered me, then she has had someone dugging deep. Dozens of us may be at risk, perhaps all of us."
Best to make a threat as large as possible if you wanted to be sure of a response.
It might even be so.
But Masana's response was a dismissive wave of one now silver hand. Her face glowed like a moon around eyes blacker than coals.
"That is ridiculous. Elida cannot decide from one day to the next whether she even believes the Black Aja exists. You are just trying to save yourself a little pain. Perhaps a little more will instruct you in your error."
Alviarin began to plead as Massana raised that hand higher, and a weave she remembered much too well formed in the air. She had to make the woman understand. Abruptly, the shadows in the room lurched. Everything seemed to shift sideways as the darkness thickened in midnight lumps. And then the darkness was gone. Startled, Alviarin found herself with her begging hands stretched up toward a blue-eyed woman of flesh and blood, garbed in bronze-embroidered green. A tantalizingly familiar woman who looked just short of her middle years. She had known Massana walked the tower disguised as one of the sisters, though no chosen she had met showed any sign of agelessness, but she could not match that face to any name. And she realized something else as well. That face was afraid, hiding it, but afraid.
"She's been very useful," Massana said, not sounding afraid at all, in a voice that tugged the edge of recognition. "And now I will have to kill her."
"You were always overly wasteful," replied a harsh voice, like rotten bone crumbling underfoot.
Alviarin fell over in shock at the tall shape of a man in sinuous black armor, all overlapping plates like the scales of a snake, standing in front of one window. It was not a man, though. That bloodless face had no eyes, just smooth dead white skin where they should have been. She had encountered Murdral before in the service of the Dark Lord, and even managed to meet their eyeless gazes without giving way to the terror those stares engendered. But this one made her scrabble back across the floor until her back jarred a leg of the table. Lurks were alike as two raindrops, tall and lean and identical, but this one stood a head taller, and fear seemed to radiate from it, soaking into her bones. Unthinking, she reached for the source and nearly screamed. The source was gone. She was not shielded. There was simply nothing there for her to embrace. The Murdral looked at her and smiled. Lurks never smiled. Never. Her breath came in ragged panting.
She can be useful,
the Merdral rasped.
I would not want the Black Aja destroyed.
Who are you to challenge one of the Chosen? Missana demanded contemptuously, then ruined the effect by licking her lips.
Do you think Hand of the Shadow is just a name?
The Merdral's voice no longer grated. Hollow, it seemed to boom down caverns from some unimaginable distance. The creature grew as it spoke, swelling in size till its head brushed the ceiling over two spans up.
You were summoned, and you did not come. My hand reaches far, Messana.
Shaking visibly, the Chosen opened her mouth, perhaps to plead, but suddenly black fire flashed around her, and she screamed as her clothing fell away in dust. Bands of black flame bound her arms to her sides, wrapped tight around her legs, and a seething ball of black appeared in her mouth, forcing her jaws wide. She writhed there, standing naked and helpless, and the look in her rolling eyes made Alviarin want to soil herself.
Do you want to know why one of the Chosen must be punished?
The voice was a bone-grating rasp once more, the Merdral seemingly only a too-tall lurk, but Alviarin was not fooled.
Do you want to watch?
It asked. She should go face down on the floor, grovel for her life, but she could not move. She could not look away from that eyeless stare.
No, great lord. She managed, with a mouth as dry as dust. She knew.
It could not be, but she knew.
Tears were rolling down her cheeks, she realized.
The Merdral smiled again.
Many have fallen from great heights for wanting to know too much.
It flowed toward her. No, not it. The great lord, clothed in the skin of a Merdral, flowed toward her. He walked on legs, yet there was no other description for the way he moved. The pale, black-clad shape bent toward her, and she would have shrieked when he touched a finger to her forehead. She would have shrieked if she could have summoned any sound at all. Her lungs were airless sacks. The touch burned like red-hot iron. Vaguely, she wondered why she did not smell her own flesh burning. The great lord straightened, and the searing pain dwindled, vanished. Her terror did not lessen in the slightest, though.
You are marked as mine,
the great lord rasped.
Messana will not harm you now, unless I give her permission. You will find who threatens my creatures here, and deliver them to me.
He turned away from her, and the dark armor fell from his body. She was startled when it hit the carpeted floor tiles with a crash of steel, rather than simply vanishing. He was clothed in black, and she could not have said whether it was silk or leather or something else. The darkness of it seemed to drink the light from the room. Messana began to thrash in her bonds, keening shrilly past the gag in her mouth.
"Go now," he said. If you wish to live another hour.
The sound coming from Messana rose to a despairing scream. Alviarin did not know how she got out of her rooms. She could not understand how she was upright when her legs felt like water, but she found herself running through the corridors, skirts pulled to her knees and running as hard as she could. Suddenly the head of a wide staircase loomed in front of her, and she barely managed to stop from running right out into the air. Sagging against the wall, shaking, she stared down the curving flight of white marble steps. In her mind she could see her body breaking as it crashed down the stairway. Breathing raggedly, in hoarse, raw-throated pants, she put a trembling hand to her forehead. Her thoughts tumbled one over another as she would have down the stairs. The great lord had marked her as his. Her fingers slid across smooth, unblemished skin. She had always prized knowledge. Power grew from knowledge, but she did not want to know what was happening in the rooms she had left. She wished she did not know that anything was happening. The great lord had marked her, but Masana would find a way to kill her for knowing that. The Great Lord had marked her and given her a command. She could live if she found who was hunting the Black Aja. Straightening her back with an effort, she hurriedly scrubbed at the tears on her cheeks with the heels of her palms. She could not pull her eyes away from the stairs falling away in front of her. Elida surely suspected her, but if there was no more to it than that, she could always manufacture a hunt. It just had to include Elida herself as a threat to be extinguished. Delivered to the Great Lord. Her fingers fluttered to her forehead again. She had the Black Aja at her command. Smooth, unblemished skin. Talene had been there, in Elida's rooms. Why had she looked at Yukiri and Doasine that way? Talene was black, though she did not know that Alviarin was, of course. Would any mark show in a mirror? Was there something that others could see? If she had to manufacture a scheme for Elida's supposed hunters, Talene might be a place to start. She tried to trace the route any message would have taken from heart to heart before it reached Talene, but she could not stop staring down the stairs, seeing her body bounce and break its way to the bottom. The Great Lord had marked her.